everyone. Welcome to the Game Diaries. I'm Michelle Morrow.
And I'm Miss Harvey. How are you today, Michelle?
I'm good. I am happy and fat and relaxed from Thanksgiving.
We're recording
on Friday, so this is the day after. And I ate all day. I just grazed all day long. It was fantastic. We had bacon-wrapped dates for an appetizer. I don't know if you've ever done that, but I'm going to just suggest to everyone out there, you get a little date, you slit it down the middle, you put some Parmesan in it, and you wrap it with some bacon, and you cook it, bake it for like 20 minutes. It is the best for people who eat meat, I guess. But it was amazing. That was my favorite part. It was better than the turkey. I was like, I'll just take a giant bacon-wrapped date and slice it.
I usually only have bacon wrapped chicken or bacon wrapped, which is what I ate last night.
Yeah, that sounds random. Good. Did you really?
Yeah. And bacon wrapped sausages. Like, you know, these baby sausages?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are really good.
Those are really good. A little bit of crispy, like a little burnt because you left it too long.
Yeah, like, yeah.
They taste perfect.
That's how I like it too. Totally. So, do you, like, even you're in Canada, do you like, just be like, well, let's have a nice dinner because everybody seems to be. No, she's like, no, we don't do that.
But we did. We were ready to watch the football games. So we're big NFL family here. But then this, I don't know if you follow NFL at all, but the Steelers were super unlucky this season because this is the second time this season. The other team has a COVID case, which delays their game. And that was supposed to be the night game of Thanksgiving, which was supposed to be the greatest, you know,
of the regular season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was canceled. It was pushed to Sunday. So at like 5 p.m., the games are over. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to go work a little bit and stream.
You did?
Yeah. Because we're in Canada. Like, we don't really celebrate it, right? So I just saw a bunch of food on the timeline too. I was super hungry.
It's a big gaming holiday, you know, people are online gaming anyway, as it like usually on Thanksgiving. This year was a little different for us, but like usually Thanksgiving is just all, you know, as soon as we get home after dinner, it's just gaming straight. And I'm going to actually do that all day. As soon as we're done with this podcast, my husband and I are going to jump on World of Warcraft Shadowlands.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
because
yeah,
Shadowlands yeah. came out and I had no time to start from Tuesday. I haven't been able to play. So today is going to be our binge day and we're going to play today, probably most of tomorrow, and just play the game. But I'm really, really happy for everybody out there who had like a Shadowlands Thanksgiving. That sounds so good.
You didn't play yet. I completely forgot to ask you. Yeah. It's been like everything that my friends have been talking about. All my WoW
Shadowlands.
Friends, you know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my God. It's so... I played some of the alpha and the beta, so I know what's up, but to me, it feels like as excited as I was for Wrath of the Lich King. Okay. It has the same kind of like excitement as Ice Crown. There's something about that. I think it's because it's Sylvanas and we're going into the afterlife. There's a potential Arthas storyline for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, they've built up Sylvanas, who's like, I mean, I don't know how much you follow Warcraft at all. Do you follow?
Have you
ever played?
Yeah, pretty intensely. The first three.
Really?
I was raiding and yeah. But
so you did like the Lich King fight?
Yes. And I also, I think I had full tier two, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
in 2020. I don't know if that's the thing anymore.
I don't even know what tier we're on anymore. I didn't play the last expansion, but not much at least.
So I had tier two, and I was starting to have tier three, and then Counter-Strike kind of took over. I was super into WoW. I've always loved grinding characters. I think the raiding is a little intense for me now, but like leveling up characters is really relaxing for me. I don't know.
Yeah, it's something about that constant reward process that we as gamers kind of like, where we're like, oh, I did it. I get something. This like barely upgrade. Thank you. Or like, oh, I can't use it, but I can use it for mats. And then you've got your whole like side skill game going, you know?
Yep.
Or like, you know, you go into an area. I think like that archaeology stuff, like I love archaeology or fishing. Like you pretty much, people play different ways. Some people play and they power level and they go through everything and they just try to get to the point where they can raid and five man and stuff. But for me and my husband, the way that we play, the way we started playing, and the way that we always play, outside of like one expansion where I rushed, but for the most part, we will sit there and we play together and we read through all the text like total nerds. Like we'll do the voices.
Yeah.
And we'll read the voices to each other in the quest text. And so then we'll follow along with the characters and we, you know, and it makes it really fun.
Oh my God, that is so cool. That is really a fun. Completely different experience than when I play with Max. Just so that people know at home, Max is the kind of person that will skip through any cinematic and will never read a single thing ever. Yeah. And it
Max
really
sacrilege.
And it really, really stresses me out. Like we're playing together, and even when I'm not playing, I'm just watching him. It stresses me out. I'm like, do you know what you're doing this right now? This is important.
He's like, don't care.
Like, I don't care. This is when I go fight people. And I'm like, what? Oh no.
That's so funny, but it's so true. Yeah. There are like two different kinds of people in this world. And like people listening, ask yourselves, which one are you? Do you like to just power level through and you don't care about the cinematics, or do you deeply need to know all of the relationships of all of the characters? Because I deeply need to be involved. Yeah.
Me too. There's a lot of games I only played for relationship, like persona games. I actually don't like much other than the relationships. Even I think Mass Effect for me might have been just about the connection between the characters.
I think that's how a lot of people played Mass Effect, right? It was about that connection, the role-playing of it.
I think so.
There's a really cool thing that happens with role-playing games is I think sometimes role-playing can get this like super uber nerdy rap. But at the same time, there's like light role-playing where you're just kind of enjoying the process of like living through these characters. And then there's like the deep role-playing where like, you know, you go on to, I've talked about this so many times, but there's the Moonguard server. Or it used to be. I don't even know if it exists anymore, really. But there was the Moonguard server on World of Warcraft.
Okay.
And they would be like doing ERP, erotic roleplay.
Okay. Oh my God! I didn't know that. What? I had no idea. That's both amazing and also like interesting. I don't want to say something that I might regret, but it's interesting and amazing.
I might regret.
Well, like, cause you know, I don't want to offend anyone.
Right, it's like whatever you're into.
Because who knows, maybe it's pretty awesome. Who knows, I've never done it. So that's why I'm like...
Don't knock it till you try it.
Exactly. No, there was,
like, so there's the, you go to like the beginning zone of the Human Alliance side.
Yeah.
And everybody shows up in Goldshire. And they, people even from other factions, and they'll go and you'll like go up into an inn and there's all of these people sitting around a bed and someone laying in the bed, or like you'll walk. I did a stream of it one time. There'd be like three bears sitting around in a circle and like a Draenei like dancing in the middle, like out in the forest, like stuff like that. It was just, I'm like, what's happening here?
And I'm guessing they were talking to each other like in
yeah, they
all.
Had, I mean. Probably on Vent, like this was back in the day, like it was probably on like Ventrilo or something. I'm sure the server is still around. Let me know. It was very funny.
I bet it is.
I'm sure there's a Shadowlands version going on.
There's probably an arcade version of that, right?
There always is. That's what's cool about role-playing games, like, right? You can be like kinky and do your shit like however you want, or you can be like, you know, just power through and do it, you know.
That's so
not pay
amazing.
Any attention. There's so many different ways to experience a game like that.
Could
That's
you be
cool
bad on Twitch
games.
For doing something like that? Probably not.
Like, I don't think for like going to visit it and see it. I don't think so. I mean, I think if you were
very interesting
participating in it, maybe. But maybe not if like Stephanie.
Crazy.
I don't know. Actually, I would love if anybody knows how it got there. I don't know how it ever was. I did a stream of it one time, though, when I used to stream for Nerdist. Uh-huh. I had a show called Massive, and the community would, we all were in the Nerdist guild, and they would play the game with me, and like we were all in the same guild. So we all started level one humans, and like we went out there to see like what was going on.
you're like going to the nude beach, right? It's like,
yeah.
You're moving your clothes for the first time. You're going at the new beach, wondering what's up.
We discovered that they didn't call it, that they called it Pornshire instead of Goldshire.
So is everything replaced by porn, you
know, pretty like much
storm it was porn so and iron porn.
Iron porn. Oh my god!
I need to take a sip on that.
That's how Stephanie's gonna be playing Shadowlands. I'd be interested though of how many people are gonna be playing this expansion, because it seems like there's a huge resurgence of excitement from players who had kind of stopped playing, mm-hmm. who kind of got mm-hmm. a little bit. I don't think it necessarily bored with the content, just that they've been doing it for so long. And after a while, sometimes you just need a break. Like, I needed a break from Warcraft for a while. Like, after you play for 15 years or so, like, you need to sometimes need to take some time off from it. And mm-hmm. I think we are seeing a lot of people coming back that haven't played forever. So, like, I'm excited to raid again. But I'm really excited for the Lady Sylvanas storyline. I've got, like, a big competition with my friend Jesse Cox. We've got a an online Twitter beef where Jesse is going to quit playing World of Warcraft if they redeem Lady Sylvanas, and I am going to quit playing World of Warcraft if they don't redeem Lady Sylvanas.
Oh no, one of you guys is gonna be heartbroken.
Yeah, it's gonna be him, so it's, you know, that's okay. It's not going to be me. They're going to like Kerrigan her. That is what's going to happen. There's not a chance in the world they're going to let her character just succumb to being like the female trope of evil. Like, just the way that they're, I mean, look, it's going to end up being a really cool story, whatever they do. But my call, my shot, what I've been saying, just so it is on record, my call is that she's going to be in one of the, like, the final boss fights, and she's going to use her three remaining Valkyrie to resurrect the tree that she burned down and the night elves that she killed. And then everything is going to be reset. That's what I think. We'll see.
I'm going to leave it on that, because I am not that into the lore, so that I don't understand much of
Well, I just basically talked a foreign language to you.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Real quick, did you like the movie, the only one that came out
a couple years ago?
Me too.
Yeah, okay. I got to interview the cast a lot. And I also got to see the original version of it prior to the edits, that the version mm-hmm. that came out. So I got to see a lot of different versions of it along the way. And I just have a special appreciation for all the work that they put into it. And because it's content, because it's a game that I love, like, deep with my soul, it was kind of like how you said you loved The Witcher, remember? Yep. Like, that was so, you thought it was so fun, and it made you cry. It was like that. I mean, I didn't cry on this, but I was really proud of it. I thought that they made magic look good, which I think is hard to do, making magic look cool in fantasy movies, unless you're like Lord of the Rings. I think that's the standard for magic. Sometimes it just doesn't look right. But there was a lot. I know a lot of people didn't love the movie, but it was a huge movie in China too. It was a huge movie in like other places. I wish we have more video game movies. For me, I think that's cool. Every time something comes out about one, I get excited about it. They're not always the most perfect, but I don't know. I don't mind watching movies that are a little bit shitty.
I really like Prince of Persia movie, and I'm super disappointed that it was supposed to be another like Jack Sparrow kind of thing. Yeah. But the reception of the first movie was not good. So Disney kind of killed it, as far as I know. And I was super upset because
it seems why do video games get kind of more shit? Like, why is it that they're getting, they get more, I feel like they get more shit than like a regular action movie.
People are extremely critical because they expect something that's unachievable. They expect to feel what the video game made them feel, but it's not possible. There's no interaction. We don't know how you felt when you played, right? Each player's experience is different. So I think that's
like
probably
what Will
why
Wright said. Remember? Will Wright said the best stories I've heard about video games are the player stories themselves.
Yeah,
it's exactly. All about, we all value the story that we have with the game and how we interpret it. So that's a really good point.
So for me, it was a good Prince of Persia movie because I'm not that connected to the Prince of Persia games. I worked on them, but I'm not like, it never was like a groundbreaking game experience for me that I feel disconnected with the movie. Like, I really liked the movie. Yeah. It was fun for me. I don't know.
It is a fun movie. I agree with you. I'm the same way. I'm not super into the Prince of Persia games either. But I did enjoy the movie. Mm-hmm. But I also, I would say I'm a kind of person who really likes to like things. I like to enjoy things. And mm-hmm. I like to find, you know, where in the work that, you know, that somebody did a good job. Just some things are just way better, you know? Like, I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. Isn't there a Last of Us movie going to happen?
So 2020 is so weird for me because I feel that there was so many announcements at the end of 2019 and 2020. And I don't know what's still accurate or not because of COVID, right?
That's true, yeah.
It's like all the Marvel things. I don't know what's going on. Are we still recording them? Are they on mm-hmm. pause? So I assume there's probably is. And I don't really know what's up with it, to be honest.
So I think now is a good time to remind everybody that if you have a story that you want to share about how video games have affected your life, we would love to hear it. You can submit your story to thegamediaries.com and let us know. There's so many people who have such personal connections to games, and we want to help share it.
I'm excited to read more stories. The couple of ones we got were so moving. I don't know. It's
it feels
fun.
Good. Yeah. I love hearing it.
Me too.
But I'm going to try to get a couple people in my Warcraft guild to write their stories in because there's been some really cool, I'm sure literally everybody knows of a cool story that happened because of gaming. Pretty much everybody can say like, oh yeah, when I played this game, it changed my life because XYZ. Like, you know, I have that with World of Warcraft. I'm sure you have that too with games like The Witcher or something, right?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of connections I was able to make through the games that I couldn't make with humans, I guess.
Yeah. Or helps you even connect with humans through a game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like these two ways, both ways. Especially in your teenager years, sometimes it can get very messy.
Yeah.
And I think that gaming allowed me to kind of feel better.
Yeah, it's a good escape, for sure.
Very, very good escape. I can't wait to talk to you about my story today. And like usual, Michelle, I'm super nervous, so...
it's going to be fun.
Okay.
You're great at this. Stop.
So we'll be right back in 30 seconds with my story of the week. Michelle, it's my turn.
I know, I'm so excited.
It's so much
I'm really excited because I am tired. Listening. So this is great. I know it's so much easier because you're just like, cool, I had the week off. And now
exactly.
I just get to listen to a cool story and learn about someone. Who do I get to hear about today?
Okay, so I had to listen to my friend Ryan Reynolds say his name to make sure that I knew how to say it right. And you'll understand what I mean by that a little bit later. You'll make the connection. But today I'm going to talk about Steven Spawn. Yes. Steven
Spawn. Oh, very cool.
If you do not know about Steven Spawn, I'm sure you will know about a couple of things that he did in the last few years, but I really want to talk about him because pretty much he is shifting the narrative for gamer with disabilities. And it is something that throughout my career when I was a game designer and even as a user now and consumer of games and just trying to fight for diversity in gaming and my new roles, too often they're like the last piece of checkmark, right? Oh, mm-hmm. Do we have like a colorblind option or do we have like subtitles? I know this might be not really close to what some gamers are experiencing for disabilities, but imagine if those are at the last bottom, at last page check mark, how gamers with disabilities are often forgotten. So I think it's important to talk about this. And let's just jump right into it, Michelle.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited. Yes.
Okay. First of all, I think I know this answer, but do you play more with a controller, a mouse, or a keyboard?
Mouse, yeah.
Oh, you are a mouse.
Yeah, I'm a mouse for sure. Controllers hurt my hands. They're really big for me. And I just, my hands hurt a lot after being on the computer typing or anything, but, or like painting and stuff. And a controller hurts my hands. And so I tend to, as much as I want the new Xbox and the PlayStation, I know that I prefer my PC. So, you know, that's kind of, I guess, the thing. How about you? You're more of a computer. I mean, you're pro CSGO. Yeah.
But I think that when I joined game design, game dev, I made sure that I was extremely aware of the controller market. So I almost only played games on the console outside of Counter-Strike just to make sure I could familiarize myself with, like, even shooters on a controller and just know what I'm talking about. Because I think I didn't want to assume that I knew. Still today, I think it's important to always be aware of what's going on in the world. Yeah. But I enjoy both. I'm going to say now in 2020, they're like,
you're there?
Almost a 50-50 for me.
Yeah?
Yeah. I cannot just game on the PC. Sometimes there's moments where I need to game and relax in the living room or on my phone or on a console, and I can't have only PC. And
I think that's, I do play a lot of Switch. Oh. I do play Switch a lot, but I do alternate between holding it and playing it on the TV. So it,
maybe
it just doesn't like get to my hands as bad as like PlayStation or Xbox, but also, I don't know, PlayStation, Xbox seems like there's more you need to do than it does really on a Switch.
Yeah, so that's something that's really interesting then. We're going to get into it. But did you know, for example, that there's all types of controllers outside of the couples we just mentioned that can be sometimes very specific to different disabilities? For example, Steven Spahn won a game with a hat controller once. Hat controller
with a
while
hat.
He was streaming.
How does that work?
So I'm going to jump right into it because this was supposed to be somewhere later in my text and my story, but I want to jump right into it because it's so cool.
That's fascinating. Okay.
We'll leave the video and the link in the comments, but pretty much how it works, he wears his little hat and it's like he's controlling a joystick, right? So he moves his hat like this. And if he wants to jump, he does like these little moves. So if you're not watching me on the video on YouTube and you're listening on podcast, know that I'm like moving my head as if I'm I'm like trying to...
Like a nod, like a quick...
Yeah, a quick nod. And that's when his character was jumping. So he played... what's this little game? Fall Guys that everyone's been playing.
Oh, yeah.
So he was playing Fall Guys with his hat and he freaking won. And Michelle, I've never won a Fall Guy game. I've never won a Fall Guy game. And here, Steven Spahn is just like casually winning with his hat controller. And it's,
I love it.
It's quite fascinating. So go watch the video. It's really awesome. Before we jump a little bit more into his life and his story, I want to talk a little bit about accessibility and disability representation in gaming and esports in general. Just because we all know that there are people who are disabled who play games, and we all know games are for everyone, but we don't really talk about it that much. Personally, I talk a lot about diversity and minority, especially women in esports and gaming. I know you're on the same boat more now than ever. I've always tried to mention, right, women and other minority groups, just because I realized that, to be quite frank, a lot of the battles that we go through, we're kind of pioneers in the minority group, right? Because the other minority groups are even smaller and even less represented, and they also need champions to support them. So
it's like what we were saying about Cuddlecore last week. Only 1% of the women were Black women.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. Games recently. So I learned a new word while doing this research. Game have been inherently ableist.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is the definition of Access Living, a disability rights and service organized organization based in Chicago. This has nothing to do with gaming. Ableism is the discrimination of social prejudice against people with disabilities based on the belief that typical abilities are superior. So like you and I would be superior with someone that against someone that has disabilities.
Right.
At its heart, ableism is rooted in the assumption that disabled people require fixing and defines people by their disability. Mm-hmm. Like racism and sexism, mm-hmm. ableism classifies entire groups of people less than and includes harmful stereotypes, misconceptions, and generalizations of people with disabilities. And when I read that, Michelle, I just had shivers right now. I overall never saw this that way. Mm. And, I have tears in my eyes. I never saw this that way. And I feel that it's important that we talk about it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's important because it's something that I was never raised to know what ableism is and to understand what it means. I feel that I've had empathy towards my life with a lot of people, and I never considered that as something like, it's like, you don't know, right?
Right, of course. Right.
And here I am learning about this week when researching about Steven Spahn. So
yeah, that's fantastic. It's always important when you learn about it. And hopefully there are people out there listening who can learn from this too.
Yeah.
Growing up, when I was a kid, my mom volunteered at this place called the Guild School in Spokane, Washington. Mm-hmm. And it was a place for kids who were born with different kinds of disabilities. So we did volunteer work there like pretty much every year with my mom. We would go there like after school with her. And do events with her. So there was a lot that I learned, like, you know, saying the R word was like a huge, like you get grounded for that in my house. So we kind of grew up with that. And then on top of that, my dad worked at the Veterans Administration. So there was a lot of veterans there who had been injured in war. So they had a disability, not that they were born with, but one that they ended up inheriting through life. So I kind of got to see from both ends, like a person who was born with those disabilities and a person who ended up gaining disabilities later in life. And knowing that those people were the same as me in the sense of they're just as important as me. That was a foundation that I'm lucky that my parents, really instilled in respecting, you know, people who couldn't do that everything that I could do, and to make sure that I would think about ways to, you know, make things accessible or interesting to anybody. So I really appreciate that part of my life.
I wonder if it's because, you know, how you don't say like handicapped anymore, it's more like disabled. And I wonder if the word disabled is actually still kind of not the greatest word to represent it. Because it feels like disabled is kind of accepting ableism, right?
Yeah, yeah. Does Steven Spahn talk about it at all? About like, I wonder if there are any words about that.
I think that could something. That's something that I would love to research about, because in every article that I read or listened to so far about Steven Spahn, he never really addresses it, but he does talk about obviously ableism a lot. So I wonder. He probably has a better term regarding that
would be, because I think that term has been continuing to be changed to try to find out what the best term is for people who really do want to, you know, respect that. Yeah.
Yeah. So So this idea that the world isn't built with accessibility needs in front of our designs and just overall of our cities, unfortunately, it's in gaming as well, right, Michelle? So when you pick up a controller to play Assassin's Creed or when you play CSGO, you know, we don't think about the people who don't have the fine motor controls or maybe even, like, you know, different kind of disabilities like hard of hearing or even blind who would love to play games, who might even consider games as like a just as legitimate source of entertainment that we do, right? And as gamers and industry voices, I feel that it's important that we talk about this, obviously. In 2020, Steven Spahn is the chief operating officer of Able Gamers, a charity that is working to combat social isolation in disabled gamers. But he wasn't always the COO. He actually didn't start Able Gamers. But in an interview that he did with Marketplace Tech, Steven said, and let me quote him here, the entire charity's mission purpose is to combat social isolation, like we talked about, foster an inclusive community, and improve the quality of life for people with disabilities.
They're a great charity, by the way. They're
you know awesome. Them?
I do, yeah. They're a fantastic charity. I met them, I think, at maybe the Esports Business Summit like 3 years ago or something. Yeah, they're great.
I like their name, their charity name. I just don't know why. I'm really into like the brands and the marketing of these kind of things. And their website is ablegamers.org. So if you want more information about what they do, go check them out. And they do a lot of advocacy work for gamers and disabilities. But they also help people with disabilities understand their gaming needs, what's out there based on their needs and habits. But yep. Michelle, that's not all. They have a program that grants money to people to buy specialized controllers and equipment. And sometimes these equipment can cost thousands of dollars.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Until Microsoft got involved. Mm-hmm. And this is the teaser of the story. This is kind of the climax, right? So let me talk a little bit about Steven's life at a young age, because his life is indeed pretty remarkable, right? So Engadget made an article about it, which the title is so mind-blowing and so lovable. It's called Terrible Fantastic Life. It's like a perfect storm of great things and bad things together, making what Steven is today, right? And if you go to his YouTube channel, you can see that most of his titles are pretty dramatically sometimes negative, but when you listen to it, they become positive while you listen to it, right? So, for example, one of his first uploads, Michelle, was called Let Me Die.
Oh, my God. Oh, wait, I've seen this. But yeah, you have? Tell me. Yeah, I remember that. I remember that now. Yes.
So in one of his most famous article that went viral, it's called My Last Good Day. So from everything that I've seen, in Steven has this kind of poetic, dramatic flair, if that makes any sense, to get people engaged into clicking, into learning about him, which I actually really enjoyed. Like for me, it's his way of saying, like, look at me, I have a story that's super interesting to say. And his titles are pretty awesome.
He's a great storyteller. That article actually made me, that article he wrote made me cry. That one, it was
My Last Good Day?
Yeah.
Do you know what is this, what Steven was born with?
I don't know the name of it, but I think it's the same one as A Fault in Our Stars.
Is that the movie? Is that a movie? Okay. So it's spinal muscular atrophy. How he describes it is that over time, his abilities are being torn away due to the atrophy that sets in from not using groups of muscles. So he compared it as if we, you and I, were to stay in bed for months of years or years without moving.
Atrophy is like when, if you have surgery, if anybody of you have had knee surgery or back surgery or any kind of like major surgery where you're laid up for like a couple months in bed, think of it like that when your muscles are like really weak, except for this is the extreme version of that. Like, it doesn't continue to get better. Like, you can go work out and, you know, try to move your body and those muscles will build back up. But once they atrophy, you know, to a certain point, that's really, that'd be so painful.
Yeah. And from my understanding, it's like you said, it's getting worse and worse with time. So is the disabilities are increasing over time, right? Which probably is what led him to be involved in Able Gamers. At 9, he was put on a ventilator because he couldn't breathe on his own. Mm-hmm. And in an interview with Exceptional Ed, so exceptionaled.com, he told a story how in high school before graduating, he went to see his guidance counselor. This is really sad. So get ready to hate humans. His guidance counselor is supposed to be there, Michelle, to support him and especially be there for all students in his school, right? It's a guidance counselor. I still can't stress enough. His name, his job is to be a guidance counselor. He told him that he had no prospects, that he couldn't go to college, and he should just go home and enjoy the time he has left before he died. And, you know, maybe he was paraphrasing what his counselor said, but if the kid gets out of your office and that's how he feels after,
like, where do you go
messed
from
up?
It's just like, where do you go from there? It makes me, it is very emotional. Anyone would say that to somebody when they're supposed to be in a position to help.
I know. I am upset.
Yeah, it's really upsetting. It's just, it's cruel. And it's not like, you know, yes, it might be harder. That doesn't mean that you say, like, that doesn't mean it needs to be harder either. There are so many different things that somebody should be able to figure out. Like, if you're a guidance counselor, part of your job should be to, like, know that people with disabilities are obviously going to come with you. Or, you know, so people who don't have equal ability to do everything. Like, I don't know the best way to say it, but they've got to know that, and they've got to be prepared to give students the correct kind of advice, especially in a learning environment.
Ugh. And I keep thinking about maybe that guy was on a bad day or whatever. But for me, if Steven was a student at a school, I feel that he should have at some point went back to him and said, like, you know, like, I fucked up or, you know, but it doesn't seem like it was the case. And it affected Steven for a while. He believed that he should just go home and die. Ugh. In his life, Steven has always played video games. Atari when he was younger, he moved on to Nintendo, and he was obviously, when I read about it, like, one of his nerds, sorry. So he's been in hospitals a lot, on and off, and one of his nerds actually bought him his first NES, his first Nintendo Entertainment System.
A nurse did?
Yeah, because she wanted him to have something to do in his spare time. And that was also in the Exceptional article. And he added, he ended up being a fantastic equalizer. When all of your friends are going out or going to a random location and in wheelchairs are not welcome, in the games, it was somewhere I could bring my friends to play with me, you know?
Yep.
And in his videos, Let Me Die, Steven talked about how he was giving a computer at an hospital as well. So these medical staff is really changing Steven's life, okay? Because he got a computer when he was at the hospital right after his tracheostomy. Not an easy word to say for me.
Wow.
Yeah. For those who don't know anything about that surgery, it's a breathing tube.
Tracheostectomy?
Yes.
Tracheostectomy?
Tracheostomy, yeah. It's a breathing tube that's inserted in your throat so that you can start to breathe on your own, right? So he spent months after in the ICU. You know, that was when he was 9 years old, and he was kind of hopeless. So he got the computer, and the nurse... I don't know why I keep calling it a nerd. She might have been a nerd. She gave him a computer.
She was a nerdy nurse. Yeah, she knew.
A nerdy nurse. And that nurse tells him that is connected to computers in other hospitals around the world, Michelle. And that was like quite a long time ago. And kids across these hospitals are playing video games together.
Yes. Yes.
So he logged on. It's one of the best parts of gaming. Right? He logged on and he had this beautiful island with waterfalls, unicorns, lots of sunshine. And he found a pink star hanging out under the biggest waterfall. And the pink star was someone else. It was another kid in another hospital far, far away.
Oh, I just have goosebumps.
Oh, and they talked for hours. So they shared their hospital experience. They talked about how much they missed their pets, you know, all kinds of things. From the same video, Steven said she quickly became my refuge, my safe harbor in a hurricane of despair. She made me believe there was hope. So that's like when I think that probably video games at a very young age, we're talking here is 9, took like a big, big chunk of Steven's life, right? To just like he said it's so good. I've never heard it before. An equalizer. And that's how I feel as a woman in gaming a lot. Like, you know.
Yeah.
The game is the equalizer. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, what you do, what hole you are. Like,
it's all about how you connect and play with the game.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
It's quite great. Steven's now 20 or in his 20s, and he can no longer use a keyboard. So his disability is growing and growing. And at the same time, video games were getting bigger. Because he was getting older, he was playing more. And to quote his words, he says that he was simply trying to figure out a way to survive. So his world was playing video games. My entire universe was being able to connect with people through online video games.
Yeah.
So he figured out how to play Ultima Online. And he actually met a girlfriend. And they had... Okay, hold on. This is interesting because they had a real-world relationship for 3 years.
Okay.
And he quotes her name. So her name was Morgan, and he feels like they're still very connected, although they're no longer together, because he still, to this day, describes her as a beautiful, witty, charming, intelligent, and way better at slaying dragons than he could ever be.
How cute is that?
It is super cute. It is the strongest woman I have ever met. So they moved in together.
Romantic.
Yeah, he is
so romantic. Steven. Steven, can you give some training to a bunch of men out there, please?
Yeah, because especially since I find very... So I don't know how you are about your exes and just the people that you are in your life, because you've been with your husband for a long time.
Yeah, 14 years almost.
Yeah. But... I find it super important to be able to express what happened in their past in a positive in kind of optimist way, right?
Yeah.
So I think I might be also a romantic.
Like yeah.
So even though they're not together anymore, like he still talks very positively about her, which I think is very
so
heartwarming.
Cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
So to go back to the equalizer, video games allowed other people to see Steven in the same way they saw himself. So most of the times, they didn't know Steven was disabled. They met him in real life, and then they were like, oh, okay. But they were already connected to him in a deeper way. So his wheelchairs or the tube in his throat didn't faze him at all because they were already friends, right?
Yeah. It didn't matter. Like, that was,
didn't matter. So video games remove the initial bias and the assumptions that pop up when you see a person with disabilities before you really know them. So it's kind of what started Steven's journey. He wanted to keep that going, but his condition was getting worse and worse. So he had to get more and more creative to play these games. He knew that technology should be able to bridge the gap between that ability and his desire. But Steven was looking for a way to try to figure out what he was going to do and what his purpose was going to be. And then he met Mark Bartlett, the founder of Able Gamers. And you describe his first encounter with Mark in that exceptional ED article. He describes Mark Bartlett as an arrogant person. And when he said that, I had to look up a little bit Mark Bartlett, because I wanted to make sure that Mark Bartlett was a good guy, because I wanted to paint the right picture of him. Because the first thing that Steven talks about is how this guy was arrogant. So after looking him up, no, Mark Bartlett is quite amazing. But why did Steven think that Mark Bartlett was arrogant at the time? So the charity was just a website then, and Mark was writing articles on it. So he was kind of like a columnist.
Okay.
Including one article that was mentioning how he cannot play World of Warcraft with one hand. Steven got upset and said, "You're wrong. You don't know what you're talking about, because I'm playing World of Warcraft with just the mouse."
Damn.
So Steven had found a way to do that without any support of anybody else. So Mark challenged him to write an article about it. So it kind of became like a little bit of like, really? Well, okay, show us how.
Yeah.
You know? So Steven did and was shocked. What shocked Steven actually is that someone actually came up to him to a conference and said, "You know, because of that article, I started playing World of Warcraft." So Steven realized that this might be his sense of purpose. Like, helping other people could be him being a pioneer in disabilities, right? So he kept writing on that website, and more people kept coming up to him, and he was getting this rush of endorphins from helping people. It's funny that he says that, because that's a little bit where I am right now, right? After competing, there's not a lot of things that make sense to me in life anymore, except like my family and helping people. The rest is like futile. Like, the only reason I need money is because I want to help people and I want to be safe with my family.
Absolutely. Right? Safety and security. Right.
Exactly.
And then everybody wants.
The rest is like, whatevs. If as long as I can do these two things, then
life's
then,
okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I kind of get it. He loved how it felt for him. So he shifted from him helping himself. And in a way, I see it as kind of like probably feeling sorry for himself. Not that he felt sorry for himself, but, you know, like in a selfless way, it was for helping others.
Right, right, right.
And at that point, he forgot all about that high school counselor that we don't like.
God, that's so amazing. It's just like, watch what I can do. Watch me.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay.
Determination.
So, let's talk about Mark Bartlett, the guy I told you that I looked.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So the founders are of Able Gamers. So it's incredible, the story that you mentioned about your dad, because he's actually an Air Force vet that retired due to an injury. Mm-hmm. And he made his career as an accessibility expert after that. So he specializes in 508 accessibilities. So what is 508? It's actually a compliance that was drafted in 86 in the Rehabilitation Act. Okay. And it was at first intended to address the workplace needs of disabled workers, but now it's a little bit everywhere on federal electronic and information technology. And it's honestly like a super big compliance guideline. If you go to siteimprove.com, you can read more about it. So to sum up that compliance, it's a U.S. law that requires all federal websites and applications to provide equal access to people with disabilities. And you can imagine how complex that can be.
Yeah.
And according to Able Gamers, Mark founded Able Gamers in 2004. So he's been on that case for years now.
Wow.
And he decided to start that after his best friend got multiple sclerosis attacks.
How do you say that?
Best? Yeah.
Multiple sclerosis.
This topic is really killing my French.
Those are hard words to say in English.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I'm doing my best. I hope that you guys can, your ears are not bleeding too much.
Try to say it like scroll, like I'm reading a scroll.
Oh, sclerosis. Oh, I see it. Multiple sclerosis. Oh, I like it. I like the scroll comparison. Okay.
Right, that'll work.
and his best friend nearly had taken away all ability to interact and connect through video games, and he wanted to make sure that no one with a disability would ever be without answers or how to conquer them and continue enjoying one of the world's largest pastimes. So, like I said, it was in 2004.
Wow.
So, Steven, when he met Mark, and you know how Mark kind of made Steven open up to talk about, mm-hmm. about this instead of like kind of, it feels like he became his mentor, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So Steven talked about how Mark was able to see through his defensive shell of sarcasm, and he allowed him to understand that you can be vulnerable while being in service to the world.
Oh.
So here you have the service-related injured vet telling me what that I could be of some kind of service to the world, and all I have to do is share my experience. And I never intended that to be a career path.
Oh, I love that.
So this is, we're getting really close to the climax that I told you guys about, which is like so awesome. It's like the prince saving the princess for me in this story. But so at this point in his life, Steven is getting more and more involved with able gamers and expanding his sphere of influence. And it's starting slowly and surely. He wrote a crime fiction book called Finder, just for fun on the side.
He wrote a crime fiction book?
Yeah.
That is awesome.
It is kind of awesome. Wait a minute.
What do we know about it? Like what it's called?
Well, I haven't read it, but it's called Finder.
You have?
No, I haven't.
I thought you have.
No, I didn't go that deep in my research yet.
I was like, wow.
It's called Finder, so look it up if you want. But at the same time, he also wrote Making Video Games Accessible for People with Disabilities. Steven and Mark co-wrote Includification, which I love.
I love that.
That name is awesome.
Hello.
Yep. And that won awards. And now they retired that includification document and they replaced it with the Accessible Player Experience. You might have heard about it as APX. I haven't, but APX is pretty much their way of saying your game needs to be accessible for all player experiences. And they created this website. If you go to accessible.games, you can find that certified APX practitioner course on it. So you can actually get APX certified. So if your game passes through this, or if you learn about this and you can design your game using these requirements, you can get APX certified.
That's great.
I got lost in their website doing my research. I freaking loved it. That website shows you how to, for a game developer, it's a golden mine. It explains to you how you should see UI. It explains for disabled people colors, sounds, and it gives you cues about how you can activate options in the game to replace sound or replace a couple of things. It's amazing. I love
that. That's awesome. That's great. Well, if there's game devs out there listening, go check it out for sure.
Yes. So I'm going to repeat it because it's so awesome. Even for non-game devs, I had a lot of time just learning about what can replace some senses that you don't have. Because it's not just about, we've talked about this today, but it's not just about mobility. Sometimes it's about way more than that. So it's very interesting.
Makes you think about maybe stuff you've never thought about.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So in 2016, when he wrote My Last Good Day, it's because he lost the ability to use his wheelchair joystick with his thumb. So imagine, like, you can't just use your thumb anymore because you can't have that dexterity anymore. So in that blog post, he said that he was committed to living his full life, and he compared it to you and I having an invisible clock above our heads, which reminded me of a Nickelback music video where everybody has a different timer above their heads, and when you see that timer, like one of the characters in the video sees all the timers and he's freaking out because he can see that some people are going to die, like crossing the street next to him. So he tries to save them and mess up with the timer.
Wow. I've never seen that.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I think it was like right after How You Remind Me from Nickelback, which is like the most popular Nickelback song. Very interesting. So it's Chad, the singer of Nickelback, can see the timers.
Oh.
So Anyway, to go back to to go back.
Chad, the guy from Nickelback.
Just see. He was saying that even when you have a terminal illness, you don't think about that clock.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is interesting. Mm-hmm. You're busy living your life, the best life you can, the best way you know how. So you don't really think about that clock. You like do your thing. Mm-hmm. And so he decided to become bolder and braver just because he couldn't use his thumb anymore. And this is when he started collaborating with the industry on a lot of cool projects. And you might have heard about his most prestigious / famous one, which is called the Xbox Adaptive Controller.
Pretty cool. Yes.
It is pretty cool. You guys at home might never have heard of Steven Spaun, but I'm sure you saw that controller before.
The Xbox Adaptive Controller is genius. It's truly a stroke of genius.
It is this controller. It looks like a fighting game pad, but instead of having tiny buttons, it's two big buttons with a couple more features, but it's white. It looks slick. I am not disabled and I want it, you know?
Like, yeah, I know. I've looked at it and I'm like, maybe because I hate the joystick, yeah. Maybe I could do that. But then I'm like, can I, like, would it work for that?
Yourself.
Like, yeah, like, I don't know. I'd be curious, what, though.
Why not? It's super affordable. You should try it. It's only $100.
Really?
Oh. It's super affordable. And that's why it was so important for him to take and collaborate with Microsoft. Because, he started collaborating with them and Microsoft and Xbox Iron Devs about the controller because Able Gamers actually had developed their own. It's called the Switchblade. And what it meant to do is to have a better R&D capability than what the Switchblade was at a lower cost for production. So I looked up the Switchblade. I was very interested. The Switchblade was pretty much just like, from what I understood, a black box with a bunch of inputs. And people would put whatever they needed in the inputs regarding their disabilities. So let's say they needed a very big button, they would put like a very big button, you know, these kind of things. So it was like super, super highly customable. But the problem is that it was pretty expensive and not mainstream distributed, right? So
At that point, you're spending as much as the console.
Yes. Right. The thing about the adaptive controller that they worked on with Xbox is that not only does it connect to Xbox and Windows via Bluetooth, we talked about how sleek the design is, but it also had on the front controller these ports from the Switchblades that allow people to also plug and play whatever they needed. And they used in other devices, right? You can map those buttons, these inputs, instantly, which was a big change from the Switchblade where you had to have, like, jump a couple of oops and it was a little more complicated. It sounds small for you and I, but, like, consider if you have a disability and you want to custom map these buttons, for example, if you change game or, like...
Yeah.
Imagine the complexity of always having to potentially ask for someone to do it for you, or, you know, it came out at $100, like I said, but it was also 10 times less than what a custom accessibility controller cost at the time.
Jesus. It's just, that's so insane that, I get the fact that things cost money and therefore like that you need to somehow offset costs.
Yeah.
What's unfortunate is that the standard thing is for everyone that's abled, and it doesn't at all include people. So now, okay, you have a disability and also you have to pay twice as much, like even maybe more if you want to play. So not only do you already have a barrier to play, but then you have to spend more money on something that can make it accessible for you. That's ridiculous.
In 2018, Steven won the Game Awards Global Gaming Citizen Award.
Yeah.
So that's already quite prestigious. I've never won an award there, and I'm kind of, I need to step up my game. I need to be more awesome. That win gave Steven the platform to promote, obviously, Able Gamers. And a little bit more recently in 2020, South by Southwest chose Steven to receive the prestigious Game Industry Champion of Change Award. he was going to be on the stage to give that speech, but then the city canceled the event due to COVID, obviously. So he's been pretty devastated about that. He really wanted to do that little, he had a 3.5 minute speech ready. And he wanted to be able to allow people to become empowered no matter their abilities. So I hope that by sharing this story today, we're like accomplishing 1% of that, right?
Anything to amplify it.
Exactly. It made him really sad, obviously, because he thinks that it's going to take opportunities like that over and over for him and others to really start pushing that narrative into society.
It's so true. It's just the repetition of doing those things. I mean, we've done it a million times for women in gaming.
Yep.
It's like you feel like you're saying the same thing over and over at a panel in a you know, convention down a hall at the end of a hallway, and you just continue to do it and do it and do it and do it. And you're like, how many times do I have to say these things? But it is about repetition, and it is about continuing to talk to people until it finally breaks through. It's frustrating work, you know, but good for him for sticking to it, man. It's hard.
And the thing is that he's like, we've been talking today a lot about how disabled means for video game and video in gamers. But, you know, he wants to make sure that people understand that it's not because you're disabled that you can't do anything else but play video games for the rest of your life. So it's like, we had this tremendous push in the last 2 years compared to decades, if not centuries, for disabled people, but it was mainly in gaming, right? With that controller that brought, I don't know if you remember the video of the launch of that controller.
I do.
Gave me tears. Yeah. It's so well done. So
it's a huge breakthrough.
It is, but we need to remember that it should be for everything, not just games, right?
Yeah, it should.
So Steven is also an advocate for the power of games bringing people together. He talked in an interview with the Pittsburgh City Paper. Video games aren't actually about the video games themselves, especially for multiplayer games. Sometimes you have somebody who really wants to play a certain game or experience a story, but it's about multiplayer games that can bring people together. It allows us to play together apart, which is extremely in right now with COVID.
Yeah.
And if you and I are experiencing the same sound, sights, experience, or bonding over what's happening in the video game itself, what's different about playing a game together versus hanging out at a baseball game?
Exactly. I've been saying this for a long time. Yeah. Whenever, you know, people don't understand like why gaming is so important or like why I spend time doing it. And once you kind of actually talk to them about the values that it brings, it's like, a lot of people have this idea that gaming is only, you know, competitive shooting, you know, just like a esport quick shoot 'em up game and then leave. Like that's how they think of it. They don't think like that they only think of violence. They don't think about like, they think it's going to rot your brain. They don't think about all the connections that you make, you know, with other people. It's so vital.
It is.
I love gaming for that reason.
I love today's episode a lot because I don't know. It's really touching.
It is touching.
I wanted to see a couple of bullet points here. I don't want to go through my story, but there's a couple of things that I need to address. The Xbox controller is a big leap forward, but let me tell you a couple facts that you might not know. Okay. Did you know that The Last of Us Part 2 has 60 accessibility settings?
No, I didn't. I haven't played it yet, so
I have no idea either. So
wow.
I have a screenshot here of all the settings. For example, you can activate advanced listening, and it's going to show visually circles in the game where sound is being triggered from. So that way that if you have a sound disability, you can visually see it. And that's one out of 60. So combat audio cues, vibration cues, if you want to hear the guitar cues, it will vibrate more on your controller. If you want to see that, it's a more intense moment, you know? So it is super, super interesting.
Very
I had no idea. Microsoft also created a gaming accessibility bootcamp. It's a route to create games for everyone. So they sent a big guidelines that developers can use when they develop their games right from the start for validating accessibility. Microsoft has a little bit of an advantage, and I say a little bit, it seems like they have like a million years when it comes to the disability advantage, but the PlayStation 5, which came out a couple weeks ago, shipped with accessibility features hardwired into the console rather than leaving it to the games and the game developer.
Smart.
So that's also super smart. You're forced to have to use it. For example, voice dictation to input text, screen reader for low vision users, text message to be spoken out loud to other party members, like stuff that you think about the last consoles is like not even close to being
One of my biggest complaints about consoles is the UI. It's like the PlayStations for years, I could never understand, like, can we bump up the fucking font size, guys? Like, it's like this big, and you have to like get up. I mean, maybe it's just me. I have to like get up and look and be like, okay, they're so far. And my husband are like, we don't need this aging process on us. We don't need to feel like this right now. I feel attacked by my PlayStation. Like,
just it was always literally too like
too small.
Too like, oh, we want you to feel a seamless experience. Can we just?
I was feeling an angry experience. Just feeling very sensitive and vulnerable.
But there's also like a color correction that will be directly in the console. So if the game doesn't have a colorblind mode and whatnot, you can go in the settings in the console and just activate
make it happen.
Which is like,
that's great.
Okay, 2020. I feel that like finally, right?
Something good happened. Something good.
Throughout the last couple of months, you might have seen also a couple celebrities unite with Steven. So as I mentioned it right at the beginning of this show, Ryan Reynolds did a little funny promo about Able Gamers that was so cute. Ryan Reynolds is a little bit everywhere in 2020.
And he's cute. He's so good at, he's just easy. I love him. He's like, you want to be friends with him. He's really cool. Mm-hmm. Good for him.
The Rock followed Steven because he was super fan, and The Rock just decided to say, hey, okay, I'll follow you, you know?
Yeah.
And just overall, he's starting to be noticed a little bit more. And he streams a lot. Also, launch his YouTube channel, trying to talk about problems and issues and disabilities. I shared that Twitter clip on my Twitter as well of him winning with the hat.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I gotta see that. I've so gotta see the hat thing.
Make sure to go check it, because honestly, I loved it. Steven has long-term game plans, right, to take on larger advocacy issues, like ensuring that accessible hardware is affordable and even covered by medical insurance.
Yeah, it should be.
Okay, so let me end with this beautiful quote from him in that Wired article that I interviewed him not a long time ago. Our end game has been and always will be that we would love to be put out of business. I'm going to run out of time on this big blue marble before I solve every problem that I'd like to in the disability community. But I'm going to knock out as many bites of the elephant as I can.
Aw. He's a good guy, dude. That's awesome. Aw. That's great. That is just great. He's just great. Like, not everybody applies themselves to a cause like that. You know, not everybody does. It takes a lot. You know, it takes everything. It takes everything to do that. You have to be fully committed to a goal like that. And he is. He's the perfect person to speak on it. Good for Able Gamers, too, for bringing him on.
And that's the story of Steven Spahn up until now. And I hope it's a long, long, long one. After that as well.
I loved that story, Stephanie. That was so great. Like, I've always, you know, I've known about him because I read an article, that one that we talked about, and I watched a couple videos, and I follow him online and read everything he says. And I'm friends with the co-founder of, Able Gamers, Zach. But you know, to learn about more about where his story kind of came from and what motivates him is really inspiring for me to hear today. Just to hear, like, it inspires you for anybody to put that kind of effort in. I remember Zach too, little side story on it. We were both on a plane trip to Vegas, but we didn't know each other really well at this time. Like, we had met once or something in person. I think we followed each other, and we were both on the same plane sitting directly next to each other. And the flight attendant made some dumb joke and the plane kind of was total crickets. And we both tweeted about it, like laughing. And somebody else said, you know, oh, look at this, like, and compared the two of our tweets. And then we looked at it and then we looked at each other and we're like, hey.
Yeah. That's actually hilarious.
It was really funny. And then I'm terrified of flying. I mean, mm-hmm. I have a total like in I can't control it kind of fear. And the plane was like, you know, terrible turbulence. And I kept grabbing his arm and he was so nice about it. Like he was really sweet. He understood that I had way too big of a fear. He was very, very understanding about it. They're good guys. Like that whole
good little anecdote.
Yeah.
I like flight people. Anecdotes. I don't know why. I think it's like a whole ecosystem that deserves their own.
Yeah.
That, like its own Twitter like trend or something.
Like, it was so like, I was like, the flight attendant was like, hey, who's ready for Vegas? And it was a bunch of like business people being like, you know. Oh, you just heard one person went, woohoo. It might have been him or it might have been somebody else. I can't remember, but we were both dying over it because no one laughed.
I love the over happy flight attendant because I think it's probably one of the worst jobs in the world.
It's got to be. It's got to be.
I would never do that
especially
job.
Especially now. Oh, God. Bless to all of those flight attendants out there. If any of you are there listening to our podcast. Oh my God. Well, this was such a great story, Stephanie. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for putting that together.
You're welcome.
And everybody, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Game Diaries podcast. Please go ahead and subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts and stars and reviews, right? Don't we need those?
Yeah. If you like us, please leave us a star and review or just comment or send us a tweet, like anything. Honestly, not only does it help us, but it also makes us feel great.
We love hearing from you guys. Anytime you guys write us, we all share it in our Discord.
Yes, like, we
they
do.
Love us. Yeah. And someone for those listened. Of you out there, we also do this on YouTube. If you're just listening to this on any of your podcast platforms, we're also on YouTube. So please hit that subscribe button on there and check us out in video
we're
form.
We're super close to our Vanity Earl, which is 100 sub, guys. So it'd be great to get it really soon. I actually never posted about it, and I think you either. So we should probably ask our friends, like, hey, could you just
yeah. I've bugged all my friends. Like, please sub so I can get this custom URL. Yeah. Like, I feel like such a weirdo. Like, hello, sub.
You know what's great news for me and not so great for you in a way? Is that next week it's your story.
Oh, that's true. It is. I gotta think about who to do. I'll think about that today after I play Shadowlands. I'll decide.
Okay. Okay. I can't wait to see because your stories are always so amazing.
This one was so inspirational, and I'm excited to go into my week feeling these good vibes. Anyway, everybody, thank you so much for listening to The Game Diaries. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.